The call came in just after sunrise. A woman down, a quiet residential street already filling with sirens. Patrol units arrived first and froze the scene. Neighbors stood back in robes and slippers, phones raised, whispering. The victim lay where she fell. No movement, no second chance. Her name was Diana Alejandre. Officers secured the perimeter while paramedics confirmed what everyone already knew. She was gone. The house behind her looked ordinary. Trim lawn, closed blinds, a place meant for safety. What investigators would learn, piece by piece, was that this killing did not erupt from nowhere. It grew under pressure. A custody dispute. Court dates, arguments that never fully cooled. Text messages sent too late at night. Fear that stayed quiet. Within hours, detectives began tracing the final days of Diana's life. They pulled phone records. They logged prior calls for service. They spoke to family members who had warned her to be careful. This was not a random act. This was personal. And by the end of the day, the question was no longer whether the killing could have been prevented. It was how close the warning signs had been and who had ignored them. Chapter 1. Setup and stakes. The scene was secured by 8:30 a.m., California time. Yellow tape cut the street in half. Detectives from the county sheriff's department arrived with evidence kits and body cameras on. They photographed the victim as found. They noted blood patterns, the position of her body, and the distance to the front door. Nothing appeared disturbed, no forced entry, no sign of a struggle inside the home. This was not a burglary. Diana Alejandre was identified at the scene through her driver's license and confirmation from a family member who arrived shortly after. She was a mother. That fact came up immediately, not as background, but as context. Investigators learned within the first hour that she had been involved in an ongoing custody dispute related to one of her children. Court documents would later confirm that hearings were active in the months leading up to her death. Detectives separated what was known from what was assumed. Known facts first. Time of death was estimated to be early morning based on lividity and witness reports of a disturbance. Cause of death would be determined by the medical examiner, but officers observed injuries consistent with a violent attack. Details were documented and sealed pending autopsy results. Neighbors reported hearing raised voices earlier that morning. Some described a single argument. Others reported nothing unusual at all. One neighbor recalled seeing a familiar vehicle near the house shortly before the sirens. That information was logged as a lead, not a conclusion. Officers ran a background check on recent calls for service tied to the address. There were prior reports, not frequent, but present. Arguments, requests for welfare checks, none had resulted in arrests. Each had ended with warnings and separation. On paper, it looked controlled. In reality, the tension had been building. Detectives requested Diana's phone from inside the home. It was recovered from a kitchen counter, screen dark. A warrant would be needed to unlock it, but even without access, investigators could already see notification previews. Missed calls, messages from a single contact repeated across days. The pattern mattered. By mid-morning, family members told detectives that Diana had expressed fear in recent weeks. She had mentioned feeling watched. She had talked about arguments over custody exchanges. These statements were documented as witness accounts, not evidence of guilt. The rule was clear. Allegations stayed separate from proof. The first destabilizing turn came before noon. A detective reviewing court records noticed a recent filing related to custody modification. The timing was close. Days, not months. Another detective confirmed that the opposing party had been notified of the filing shortly before the killing. That information shifted the case from general homicide to targeted investigation. This was not just about what happened that morning. It was about what had been set in motion long before. By the end of the first day, investigators were no longer asking who Diana Alejandre was. They were asking who had the most to lose if she stayed alive and how far that person was willing to go. Chapter 2. Escalation and reversal. Detectives moved fast once the custody timeline came into focus. This was no longer an open field. It was narrowing. They began reconstructing the final 72 hours of Diana Alejandre's life, starting with verified movements and documented contacts. Emotion stayed out of it. Sequence mattered more. Phone records were subpoenaed by late afternoon. Investigators charted calls and messages hour by hour. One contact dominated the log. Repeated attempts, short gaps, a pattern that suggested pressure rather than conversation. The content would take time to unlock, but frequency alone told its own story. At the same time, detectives interviewed staff connected to the custody case. Court clerks confirmed recent filings. A family court mediator noted heightened tension during the last exchange. Nothing criminal, no threats recorded, just escalation, raised voices, hard stares, a refusal to compromise. That mattered. Surveillance footage became the next priority. Cameras from nearby homes and traffic intersections were pulled. Most showed nothing useful. Empty streets, early commuters. Then a break. One camera captured a vehicle slowing near Diana's residence shortly before the estimated time of death. The image was grainy but usable. Vehicle make and color were logged. The plate was not visible. Detectives cross-referenced the vehicle description with known associates. The match was close enough to warrant attention. Still not proof. Just alignment. The autopsy report arrived the following day. Cause of death was ruled homicide. The injuries confirmed a violent attack. The medical examiner documented defensive wounds. This was not sudden. This was a confrontation that turned lethal. Time of death aligned with witness statements and camera footage. Pressure increased. Investigators returned to the house with a clearer lens. They re-examined the entryway. No forced entry still held. Diana had likely known her attacker or at least allowed them close enough to strike. That eliminated random suspects. It also raised questions about trust. Detectives obtained a warrant to access Diana's phone. Messages revealed arguments tied directly to custody exchanges. The language was tense. Control surfaced repeatedly. Phrases about rights, about fairness, about consequences. Investigators flagged messages sent in the days before the killing. The tone shifted from negotiation to demand. None of that proved murder, but it established motive pressure. A second destabilizing turn came during an interview with a close family member. They reported that Diana had changed routines recently. Different routes, different times. She had said she felt unsafe. This was documented as a witness statement, not corroborated fact. But it aligned with the digital trail. Detectives brought in the opposing custody party for questioning. The interview was recorded. The tone was calm at first, cooperative. They acknowledged arguments, but denied violence. They claimed to be elsewhere at the time of the killing. An alibi was offered. Investigators did not challenge immediately. They listened. They logged details, times, locations, names. Every statement became something to test. When surveillance footage was introduced, the room shifted. The vehicle description matched. The timing overlapped. The subject adjusted their account slightly. Not dramatically. Just enough to notice. That adjustment was documented. Still no arrest. The case tightened when license plate reader data placed the vehicle within a mile of Diana's home during the critical window. That data contradicted part of the alibi. Detectives confronted the inconsistency. The response was delayed. Explanations became longer, less direct. By the end of the second day, investigators were facing a countdown. Evidence was aligning, but alignment was not enough. They needed confirmation. Physical, digital. Something that would hold. The trap was set quietly. Search warrants were prepared. Phones, vehicle, residence. Each step required precision. One mistake could fracture the case. As night fell, detectives waited on one final piece of data. Location pings from a secondary device tied to the suspect. If it placed them at the scene, the case would turn. If not, everything stalled. The timer was running. Chapter 3, Resolution and Aftermath. The location data arrived just before dawn on the third day. Investigators gathered around a single monitor. No commentary, no speculation. The data either held or it did not. It held. The device tied to the suspect placed them within yards of Diana Alejandre's home during the window established by the medical examiner and surveillance footage. The signal did not drift. It stayed. Long enough to matter. That information shifted the case from pressure to action. Detectives executed search warrants that same morning. The suspect's vehicle was seized. Inside, investigators recovered items later logged as evidence. Nothing dramatic, nothing cinematic, just ordinary objects that connected timelines and movement. The residence search produced additional digital devices. Each was bagged, labeled, and sent for analysis. The arrest followed without incident. the suspect was taken into custody and booked on suspicion of murder. In public records, charges would later reflect the findings of the investigation. In the interrogation room, the tone changed. Confronted with data, the suspect's statements narrowed, explanations shortened, silence filled gaps where certainty had been before. Prosecutors reviewed the case with care. They separated what could be proven from what could only be argued. Custody disputes were documented. Messages were authenticated. Location data was verified through independent sources. The theory was clear. The path to proving it required discipline. In court filings, the killing was presented as the result of escalating conflict tied to custody control. That framing was supported by digital records and witness testimony. Allegations were stated as allegations. Facts stood on their own. Diana Alejandre's family attended hearings quietly. They did not speak to cameras. They focused on the process. The case moved forward step by step without spectacle. In the aftermath, questions lingered. Prior reports had been made. Tension had been visible. Warnings had existed but had not crossed legal thresholds. Nothing on paper had justified intervention before it was too late. That gap became part of the story. The resolution did not bring relief. It brought weight. A life lost. A child left without a mother. A custody dispute that ended not in a courtroom, but in a crime scene. The final court outcome would come later, after motions, testimony, and deliberation. But the truth that settled early did not change. This was not sudden violence. It was a slow burn that reached a breaking point. Diana Alejandre's name now sits in records and filings. Another case closed by procedure. Another reminder that escalation does not always announce itself loudly. Sometimes it waits until the damage is irreversible.